All right, this week on the Media Podcast, I've been excited to sit down with Jeff Munn. I have waited to visit with a longtime broadcaster, man of many talents, because it is the start of women's basketball season. He's the longtime voice of Arizona State Women's Hoops with Charlie Turner Thorne. He, of course, has done so much through the years, whether it's a newsman at KTAR, whether it was with the Diamondbacks at a period of time, the Suns, public address announcing. You've heard Jeff's voice through the years. If you had to do it all over again, would you do it all over again?
Most of it.
What wouldn't you do over again?
Well, I guess I got to change the answer to all of it, because I can't think of anything specific over an extended period that I said, why did I do that?
Did you wish you started play-by-play earlier?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So
and I was
change.
A coward, and that's why I didn't start earlier.
Okay. And the coward being?
I had myself convinced, this is the same thing that why I didn't get into radio right out of high school or go take radio courses.
High school is where?
Carl Hayden.
Okay, and so you went from Carl Hayden and you...
I worked for 2 years at a hotel downtown, the Ramada Inn downtown. I was a desk clerk, and they kept, my boss kept telling me, you really got to go into radio. I'd get on the PA system to page a bellman, and it's like...
Paging Brad, yeah. Over to you. Yeah. Or in your case, paging Brad.
Well, and the general manager of the hotel kept saying to me, you really ought to go into radio. And I just kept telling myself, no, I'd fail.
You're 19, 20.
Yeah.
Right around there.
And it was finally a night. I was driving down Central Avenue. There used to be a broadcast school, the Ron Bailey School of Broadcast. I didn't go there because I was very suspicious of broadcast schools. Mm-hmm. But I drove by it, and I thought, okay, it's time. And I enrolled for the fall semester at Phoenix College, took radio courses, did not take anything else. That's the one thing I wish I had really done differently, is that when I made the decision to go to college, that I just dove in and got it done. But I went with the intention of, I'm going to get into radio. I got into radio, and I said, okay, mission accomplished.
First radio job.
KWAO-FM in Sun City.
Doing?
I was the evening disc jockey.
Playing?
Well, when I was playing records, it was big band.
Ooh, that's fun.
The station was owned by, and I want to use the terminology correctly, it was owned by a church, not the church, like the Baptist church.
Sure.
It was owned by a singular Baptist church in Pennsylvania. I have no idea how they got the license.
Hey, on our ledge, we have this radio station
right.
in Sun City.
And they sent...
Place. It
yeah.
plays big band.
Well, that's it's Sun great. City. It's yeah, yeah. 1979.
Yeah, yeah.
And my shift was 6 to midnight. You'll love this. 6 to 7, I played instrumental music because it's the dinner hour. And people are
that
having dinner in
beautiful.
Sun City. 7 o'clock, beautiful. We did an hour of old-time radio.
How did you introduce yourself on the air every time? Did you just play the music, or did you have to
No, that instrumental was like a beautiful music station. There were no announcers.
So you did not say, now Glenn Miller.
No. No, the 8 to 10, I played big band music, and I did that as a DJ.
How'd you do it?
I would introduce songs.
Like, give me an example.
I copied the KOY style.
Okay, give me it. Just do it like the song just ended.
That's Glenn Miller and Tuxedo Junction. It's 8:13 on KWAO.
I love that. Did you do any live reads, any commercials?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember any of them?
No.
I did Ann Pfeffer Jewelers.
No.
Now, saying Pfeffer when I'm 20, that's a challenge.
Now, do you remember Dan Grubb?
Sure.
His dad, Lou Grubb,
sure.
Had a car dealership, and he did a show on local radio called Take Five with Lou Grubb, where they do this commercial pitch and then play a beautiful music song. It was on a bunch of stations in the market. At one point, Lou Grubb got invested in the local bank in Sun City, Citibank, mm-hmm. and they created a Take Five show for Citibank. That's a commercial I remember.
That's good.
10 to midnight, we would do religious programming because it was owned by a church.
Right.
And all jokes aside about Sun City being God's waiting room, I mean, it was the most unique experience. I would get to work at 4:30 in the afternoon. The studios were at 107th Avenue and Grand in a strip mall, behind the strip mall.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's bustling. People are everywhere. 6 o'clock, empty. Just gone.
Gone.
And then at about 8 o'clock at night, about once a week, some listener would show up with baked goods.
Yeah.
It was their radio station. They were fiercely just possessive of this frequency, which is now Spanish. Most stations I've worked at have turned to Spanish as soon as I left.
When did you know you were going to make it?
Oh.
What job?
KNIX.
Okay, so when you're at KNIX, then You're how old?
I'm 23.
Okay, and the pinch yourself moment was?
I just walking in there. I had been at two radio stations, KWAO and KXIV, which were, there wasn't a lot of money available to be spent.
What's a lot of money? I mean, what were you getting paid, $8?
Well, I was getting paid.
$10 an hour?
I'm getting paid 160 a week.
160 a week, and you're working?
40-hour week.
40-hour week.
But
$4 an hour.
Yeah, the equipment was not in the greatest shape in the world. You go to KNIX, which was owned by Buck Owens Broadcasting at the time, and I always said it was like going from a raft to a cruise ship. It was just, it was almost too much. It was overwhelming at times. Mm-hmm. And in a way, Brad, it almost happened too fast.
You were how old?
I was 23.
23.
And I got caught up. It was the 80s. You know, we were all enjoying indulgence at things.
Yeah.
Nothing illegal, mind you, but it just happened too fast. And I was starting to get in that mode for a couple of years of like, wow, this stuff's easy. And I was making more money than I could have ever dreamed of.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I always tell people about Buck Owens Broadcasting, and Buck Owens in particular, and for your audience who doesn't remember, he's a legendary country music artist. We've all worked mostly at radio stations where they're always saying, we don't have the budget.
Yep.
At Buck Owens, they had the budget.
They had the budget.
They never chintzed a dime. They never said, we can't spend that kind of money.
You and I crossed paths for the first time when I came from San Diego to KTAR.
Right.
How did you land at KTAR?
I was out of the business for about 4 years.
What'd you do?
I went back to school full-time at ASU.
At ASU. So and you had a call in, something
yeah, tugged, just in you. Here. I thought I'd played out the string at KNIX. I just didn't know what to do. I had been involved with ASU Athletics as the stadium announcer at baseball and a whole bunch of other Olympic sports for a number of years. And I just thought, I got to go do this. I'd been exposed to the university culture, and I thought, I need to go do this.
Right.
So I went to school, worked in the media relations office for Mark Brand. And somewhere in 1991, I joined the Suns. I get engaged. My soon-to-be bride kept saying to me, I'm not supporting this family on my own. You got to go get a full-time job. So the Suns offered me an opportunity to work in media relations for their fledgling Phoenix Arena Sports. Which
Jerry Colangelo offered you the job?
Yeah. Rattlers. We had indoor soccer. We had team tennis.
Yep.
So I'm doing that. We had just moved into brand-new offices. I was basically with the Rattlers, in addition to my work with the Suns. Our mutual friend Jeff Scott calls me one day, and I'd known Jeff for a long time, and he said, would you like to come down and do some evening shifts?
Evening shifts?
And I said, sure.
That's Jeff Scott.
Yeah. Lori, my wife at the time, was working nights at Channel 5, so it was not hurting her that I was working in the evenings. About 2 weeks into it, Jeff calls me, asks me if I want to go to lunch at Macayo's at Central and Indian School. They need a midday anchor. And he said, would you be interested? And I kind of laughed and I said, you haven't got the money it would take to get me back into radio.
Mm.
And we laughed.
Because you were used to Buck Owens.
Yeah. And we laughed and had a good lunch.
Right.
Next day, I'm in my office at the Rattlers. Phone rings. It's Jeff Scott. He said, I just talked to the people at Pulitzer.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's a good Jeff.
And they do have the money it would take to get you back into radio. He quoted me a salary. I have so many funny stories about this. He quoted me a salary. I came home. It was a Friday night. And I walked in. I had worked a Cardinal game. My wife had just gotten home from her shift at Channel 5. She asked me, she said, did you talk to Jeff today? I said, yes. I told her what the salary was. Whatever kitchen utensil she was holding at the time, she slammed down on the counter and went, you will take the job. And I said, what? She goes, you will call him Monday and take the job. And
meat, I'm like,
oh, okay.
Meat cleaver.
You know, best decision I ever made. I have never had happier times as a radio broadcaster than when I was at KTA, or you know what it was like. I mean, it was, we were the pulse of this community, of this metropolis.
It was, we worked with people that, you know, Bill Haywood's no longer here with us. Pat McMahon is still here with us. Preston Westmoreland has gotten out of the business. And it was like this rock star deal. You'd walk in every day, and I'm 28 at the time, looking around, and late Bill Strauss was there. Yeah. And I mean, just talented people and producers that were very good. And it was just a completely different, like, this is what radio should be.
That's how I felt.
The broadcast arena has opened a lot of doors for you. You mentioned something earlier that I thought was interesting. That's the Olympic sports and ASU baseball. If you were to say the greatest ASU athlete that you had the pleasure of introducing at a game when you cracked your mic open, not as a play-by-play guy, because you've done play-by-play
right.
for ASU too, but as a public address announcer, someone stepped to the plate, someone hit a free throw, someone caught a touchdown, who would it be?
The greatest athlete?
Yeah, that you ever saw, that you're like, wow, looking back on it.
I would have to say...
Track and field, who, swimming, doesn't matter.
You know, it's really funny. I did some wrestling matches when they won the national title in 88, and wrestlers have always impressed me so much. But if I had to say greatest athletes, there are two, and they're both baseball. Barry Bonds, mm-hmm. because he was not the Barry Bonds that people remember.
Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
How'd you do Barry Bonds?
Just like that, Barry Bonds. There
not
was nothing.
24 Barry Bonds?
No.
Not,
he was.
Was he 24?
Yes.
Okay.
He did wear 24.
Okay.
No, just straight number 24, Barry Bonds.
Bob and Warner?
I did not see him. I saw him a couple times as a fan. The other guy was Alvin Davis.
Alvin Davis, okay.
The sweetest swing I have ever seen. All the years I did Major League Baseball, the D-backs, never saw anybody that had a more beautiful swing than Alvin. He was one of those guys you get up on Christmas morning and go 2 for 3.
How did you come to the Diamondbacks? How did that work? Again, Jerry's Empire.
I was a news anchor, KTAR. I'm the arena announcer for the Suns, and I'm still doing a lot of their summer stuff. And they get the baseball team, and I start hearing rumors that they want me to come do baseball. I initially didn't want to do it because I was very happy at KTAR. I did not want to work that many nights. My wife and I were just starting a family. And Scott Brubaker came to me and said, what if we made PA announcing your full-time job? We find some other things for you to do in the office, but you're just, you know, pretty much game day, you come in and do the game. Well, okay, that worked out perfect because once my son Patrick was born, it was pretty advantageous for me to be home during the day, mm-hmm. changing diapers, doing the feedings.
Yep.
And that's how it got started. I did work for their PR agency, SRO Communications, for a year and a half before baseball really started getting, it was like December 97, I think I transitioned over.
I hope you're understanding this as we're talking how many different things that Jeff's done. If you're going to be in this business, and the students, or if you...
I can't hold a job.
Yeah, you can't hold a job. But the thing is you've done a lot of things that put you in that position that they could say, you know what, he could do the public address announcement. He can work for SRO. You can host shows. I mean, you could do all those
right.
things from your KTAR days.
I did do a show for a year, just a 30-minute show. Part of the contract the Diamondbacks had with KTAR, you remember this, they got a 30-minute show every week, and it was just called the Diamondbacks Radio Show. Amy Bender did it the first year. She left, and it was Brew again, came to me and said, we'd like you to do this show. It ran at like 2:30 in the afternoon. You filled in for me one week when my mother passed away. And I said, what do we do on it? And he goes, well, you know, it's our show. We want to promote the club, but you can do pretty much anything you want. The first time the words Arubio Durazo were ever said were on that show by Roland Heeman. And
great man.
We had so much fun. I got to be creative. I did a show where we did an entire segment from the Line and Kugel's Brewery.
Yep.
I did another one.
High tops, Line and Kugel's, yeah, whatever they want to call it.
We started calling it McLine and Tops.
That's good.
Our dear friend Susan Webner, when she came to the organization, she was running that fan loyalty program,
yep.
swipe the card and get points. I did a whole segment with her one time where we did that, and you know, I kept putting my number in it, saying, Jeff, get out of here. Don't, you know, you're not eligible. But I did that for a year, I think, and then the show went away. So obviously I had great impact with it that it got canceled. Yeah. But yeah, they kept finding little things for me to do. And eventually, once Mike Swanson was hired as media relations director for the D-backs, I went over and worked on his staff.
So you left the Suns. Were you trying to balance both?
I was doing both. I was announcing for both teams.
Yeah. When there was a conflict, who would take priority?
We had a very specific system. The organization always felt the Suns are the mothership. So it would go Suns, Diamondbacks, and what we call Phoenix Arena Sports. But playoffs would trump everything else.
Got it.
So if there was a Rattler playoff game and a Diamondbacks game, I would go do the Rattler game. And Jeff Scott filled in a lot for me
makes sense.
D-backs. And that's how we did it.
Play-by-play baseball. Play-by-play Arizona State women's basketball. When did the play-by-play bug start, and how did you get there?
It goes back to when my mother died in August of 1999. I had always thought in the back of my mind, the same thing about getting into radio. I'd love to do it, but I'd probably stink at it. So why embarrass yourself? You've got a nice little niche here doing PA. There were two things. I could sense the role of the PA announcer, and especially in professional sports, was changing, and I probably wasn't going to be able to make
the adjustment. Be a cheerleader, right?
Yeah.
Yell, and scream, get up, make noise, all that.
And I could say something about that, and maybe if we have time at the end. When my mother died, my oldest brother, who had spent most of his adult life away from here in the service, he obviously came for the funeral, and we're at my sister's house afterwards, and we're just socializing. And at some point he looks at me and he's, you're just a huge baseball fan. And he said, well, what are you going to do? And I thought he meant right now. And I said, oh, I'm going to wait about another hour. We'll probably go home. He said, no, what about your career? What are you going to do next? Mm. And I said, I don't know. And he said to me, he goes, I think you ought to try doing play by play. And I thought about it and thought about it. And eventually, I went and I talked to Jerry about it, thinking, Rich Dozer said to me, you ought to go talk to Jerry. Well, I went and talked to him, and I thought, well, that's great, but what, you know, that's probably not going to mean anything. A year later, they had sent me out to do some Mercury games, and I thought, at one point, Rich said to me, make sure you get a tape. And I thought, he needs something to play at the Christmas party. Listen to how bad this guy was. And they offered me the fill-in job. And I kept saying to Rich, you know, I've never done baseball. No problem. You'll be great. Get out of my office. And that's where that started. The ASU thing, I had done a number of fill-in baseball games for ASU. June of 2004, our friend Mitch Otto, who was kind of helping out running the network, called me, said, Vince Murata was leaving the job doing women's basketball, and you knew a guy, would you be interested? And I said, no. I just thought, no. I just wasn't that interested.
Huh.
About a month later, I'm on the road with the D-backs. We're in San Francisco. I have this, and I still have it to this day, this big ASU jacket with a big Sparky on the side. It's San Francisco in July. It's cold, so I took the jacket with me. I'm get on the bus in this jacket, and all of a sudden, as I sat down on the bus, it just hit me. What were you thinking?
Yeah.
I've admired a great many broadcasters in my life. I always thought to myself, what would it be like to be Tom Dillon?
Mm-hmm.
Not from the Cardinal aspect, but from the ASU aspect. And I thought, they offered me a chance to kind of figure that, to live that, and I said no. True story. The following Monday, Mitch called me again and said, we had a guy, it's a guy you know, and I'm not going to say
fine.
It on the podcast.
Fine.
They had him lined up. He backed out. And he said, would you reconsider? I said, no, I won't reconsider. I'll take the job. And I've been there ever since. I remember the first games I did, we played in a tip-off tournament in Baton Rouge at LSU. And I remember driving in a rental car to the arena that night. It was a Thursday night in Baton Rouge. Thinking to myself, do I have any idea what I'm doing? I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Because you haven't done basketball.
I'd done about three or four basketball games, so, and I wasn't happy with any of them. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, if this doesn't work, then I've made ASU mad. You know, I really didn't, you know, Charlie and I didn't know each other very well at the time.
Charlie Turner Thorne.
She was probably going to come over and strangle me at halftime, and, you know, then there'd be dead air the rest of the game. So,
but it's worked out. If Charlie Turner Thorne had not come into your life, what would you be doing today?
Boy, that's a great question. I don't know. And You know, it was always people at D-backs were always puzzled by, why do you keep doing this women's college basketball? It's, and you're right. I mean, you couldn't find two more opposite worlds to be in. Mm-hmm. Major League Baseball, multi-million dollar players, you know, five-star hotels, charter aircraft. Here's women's college basketball. We're playing in front of, a lot of times on the road, in front of 100 people. The accommodations are not bad. We stay in a lot of Marriotts, but we fly commercial. Some of it is just, I'm a Sun Devil, and I don't care if they asked me to sweep the parking lots at ASU, I would do it. The other part is I have, there are stories about Charlie that I have never told publicly. And I'll tell one because I know that, you know, we want the people listening to this podcast
time
to get some benefit out
time
of
constraints.
It. Very quickly. When my marriage ended, and it was a painful ending, one I did not expect, mm-hmm. The first Christmas season was excruciating.
Understood.
And I was a mess. I'd be the first to admit it. We had a home game on December the 28th of 2009. I was still driving to, I was in a, just a fog driving to the arena that night. Came in to do Charlie's pregame interview, and she knew right away something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She knew about the whole thing. And she said, I want you to come back after the game. I want to talk to you. Game ends. As soon as the game started, I was fine. She came in. She said, okay, we're going to start going on the road, Pac-12. She said, effective right now, you're coming to dinner with us every night on the road. She said, I do not want you sitting in your room staring out the window.
Smart.
And she said, if we don't see you when it's time to go to dinner, we're sending somebody to your room to come get you.
Wow.
And she said, if you're not there, I want you to tell me. So when people say to me, you know, what I am intensely loyal to that program, to her. I made certain when I took on this football assignment, I'm not missing basketball for this, because I was not going to make Charlie feel like I was using her as a stepping stone.
Mm. And there's other stories, I'm sure, too.
Oh, tons.
If I were to say Tom Dillon, give me a minute on Tom Dillon, what would you say?
Well, for the historians, he was really, in my mind, the first true voice of the Sun Devils. There were guys that were very good sportscasters, including Al McCoy, who had mm-hmm. done ASU games, but they were always involved in other things. Vice presidents at radio stations, Al was doing all kinds of different things around town. Tom, to me, was... The thing I marveled about was his consistency. You got the same guy night after night after night. Didn't matter the sport. He was, some guys in college jobs are great at one sport and they're kind of okay at others.
Mm.
He was great at everything. Everything. And I just, he could have gone on. I know he had an opportunity in the 80s. There was a chance he would have joined Denny Matthews with the Royals. He would have been terrific on Major League Baseball. And it just... That was the thing that I always marveled at, was he could come in, doesn't matter the game, doesn't matter sport, same guy. Why is McDonald's so successful? You can go to a McDonald's in Yuma and get the same kind of hamburger that you can at the McDonald's in Times Square. So that's what a whole bunch of things, but that's at the top with him.
You've done news. You do news now at KTAR when Jim Sharp is not in. I hate using the word fill-in because you can do it. When you do a news product in Phoenix, outside of your employer, who do you look at and just say, wow, this person really gets it done? Doesn't matter if it's TV, radio, written, present day.
John Hook.
Okay, and past, still John or someone in the past? Because you know Phoenix so well, you may look around and say, this person, female, male, doesn't matter, front-facing talent, just had the market captivated.
I was a big fan, and this is a guy very few people would remember, news anchor at 12 and later at 3, two guys, Ray Thompson and Dave Nichols. Dave Nichols was the 10 o'clock anchor at 10 for years, and he went to 3, and he had this kind of just under-the-radar sense of humor. He could be very witty, very dry.
Mm-hmm.
Liked him. To bring it up to more modern times, always admired Kent Dana. I was a big fan of Linda Alvarez, who worked at 12 for a number of years. And you're just talking about news. You're not
sure.
Talking about sports.
Yeah, just news.
Those are the people.
Who do you mirror your style after on the air to be a newsman?
Wow.
Who's impacted you?
Frank Asbury, who was the news director at KNIX for a while. Prior to that, had worked at KOI. I was a KOI junkie as a kid.
OK. Okay.
Bill Haywood was the guy that convinced me this might be a fun way to make a living. He was, you know, we all have our Mount Rushmores.
Sure.
Bill's on mine, along with Pat, Al, and Vin Scully. And anybody that worked at KOI, I thought, you know, Jim Brock, when he was a baseball coach at ASU, had a great saying. He said, when you put on the uniform of the Sun Devils, you change as a person, and you're never the same again. And I felt the same way about anybody that worked at KOI. And I also felt the same way about anybody that walked in at KTAR when we were all there. If you were good enough to put on that uniform, your perception to other people changed immediately. And that's, Frank was a newsman at KOI. I did traffic. It was one of the other things I did at KNIX. I was the fill-in traffic watch guy. And
I-17 at Bethany Home.
Yeah. I have a whole plethora of stories. I flew in a twin-engine Cessna with a student pilot.
A barbecue
one
on
day.
I-10.
Well, it was a different town in those days. You focused more on, you had to watch the freeways, but there weren't as many freeways.
Yeah, Central and Bethany, there's a crowd.
Right. And we had a day. I know we got time constraints. We ran out of gas on our final approach. And the pilot had to land the plane on 7th Street. We flew out of Deer Valley Airport. Mm. And I never worried. That flying traffic watch for 7 years at KNIX got me completely over my fear of flying. When I fly commercially now, I never panic. We were in a snowstorm one time in Spokane with ASU. We're taking off, and our publicist, Steve Rodriguez, can get a little nervous. And I kept telling him, all I got to do is get the nose up, and we're out of here. They got the nose up, we were gone. I would never have known that if I had not flown traffic in a twin-engine Cessna out of Deer Valley Airport.
What do you want to do you haven't done? I mean, to say what's next is not really a great question, but what you look across the landscape and say, I really want to do this. And it doesn't matter if it's in broadcast or professionally or personally even.
I was, as you know, I was up for a job about a year and a half ago in Reno, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Voice of the Nevada Wolfpack. I think it's fairly obvious. I didn't get it. But
benefit to everybody here.
But that was like a lightning bolt between the eyes. I thought, that's what I want to do. Now, if I say that, people say, well, you want to be the voice of the Sun Devils. No, I've never been a guy. I've never been a vulture. I never go after people's jobs.
And there's lots of people that do in this.
Yeah.
Business,
and
just
I,
so you know.
And I would never, Tim Healy is a professional. He does a terrific job. This has nothing to do with Tim, but if another job, and I admit, I still kind of eyeball Nevada and thinking, the guy's not going to be there forever.
Sure.
If it comes open again, I'm going to pounce on it.
Sure.
Because I would think it would be really cool, because being the voice of a college, you get to do a little of everything.
Small town. It's
yeah.
Not as big.
Well, in
academia.
You're
it's
doing,
like when I taught at Cronkite.
Yeah.
I get it.
You get football today. You get men's basketball tomorrow.
Swim
and,
team.
And I'm a workaholic.
Yeah.
And I would like to do something like that, partially because I love college sports, partially because I'm happiest when I'm working. That's why I loved baseball so much, because you could devote 15 hours a day to it if you wanted to.
Yeah. Jeff Munn, he needs to come back, because I could do another 40 minutes on the media podcast.
Yeah, that's true.